Greetings, all you 99%ers. This is your host, Dr. Jack Rasmus. This is Alternative Visions. Okay, today we're going to dedicate our show to a very important discussion. And that's the election in Mexico that was just held last week, where a new president is going to take the reins in Mexico. Andres Lopez Obrador, who is for the first time not a candidate, a president from the two leading business parties, the PRI, P-R-I, and the PAN, P-A-N, who have alternatively run Mexico for decades and, of course, run it into the ground. It's never been worse situation in Mexico than there is today on a whole set of fronts. So we have a new president there, elect, taking office in December, and I have a guest, Alan Benjamin, who is very well informed about what's going on in Mexico, spends time there, as well as in the labor movement here in the United States. So we're fortunate to have Alan here, who's going to give us a firsthand view, since he knows many people down there and is in direct contact with them. And has a pretty good view of what's going on that you won't get in the U.S. media, certainly, and probably not even in most of the Mexican media as well. Hello, Alan, you with us?
I am indeed. Thank you, Jack.
Okay, well, let me just start with some questions here, Alan, and then you just jump in and inform us what's going on and what may go on, just as important. Some questions here. You know, Andres Lopez Obrador is called AMLO, which is A-M-L-O, short. So we'll just refer to him as AMLO from this point on. And some questions for you to consider here, Alan, before you jump in. Why did AMLO win this time? He had run a couple times before and lost, probably had the election stolen from him the last time around. But he's been in politics down there for quite some time, at least 20-some years. I think he was the mayor of Mexico City as well for some period of time. So why did he win this time is one question. Another key question is, does this mean real change in Mexico? Why not? Is AMLO a repeat of Obama 2008. You know, I watched the elections here, and it looks a lot like Obama 2008. Of course, the characters are different. It's not exactly, not even close in some ways, the same. But this popular belief that now we have a progressive knight on a white horse here who's going to lead the country in a progressive direction. A lot of people had that misconception with Obama, of course, and we saw what happened in Obama, virtually nothing for real folks, while the rich got richer still. So is this to what extent is this an Obama 2008 phenomenon? Another question, can social democracy succeed in Mexico? I mean, progressively, this is kind of like his program, a social democratic program in some ways. And yet we see everywhere around the world, social democratic parties are going under because they ally themselves, or tended to, with wings of the neoliberal business forces that have taken over everywhere in Europe and North America, Japan, Asia. Can this succeed when the others are being destroyed? Self-destruction in many cases. What's AMLO's relationship to Mexico in U.S. businesses and Trump? What will he really do about NAFTA? And can Mexican workers and youth succeed in keeping this guy following his campaign promises and not bending to business sources and influences? Anyway, those are some questions that have been on my mind. I have no answers to them.
Okay.
I don't really understand, like most of us do, what's actually going on there. So, Alan, educate us, inform us. What does all this mean?
Let me Let me take it away. Well, why did he win? He won because Mexico is facing one of the most severe crises in its history. Corruption is rampant. Killing is rampant. Corruption, drug trade. But more than that, over the past 30 years of the implementation of NAFTA and the directives of the IMF and World Bank, Mexico has been pillaged and destroyed. Its public services, its public institutions and corporations have been decimated and put on the up for sale. The people have lost their jobs, and the farm sector has been devastated. The ejido, which were the cooperative lands and land ownership, was dismantled as a direct requirement of the NAFTA treaty, which is why tens of millions have been forced to flee to the United States, or in the case of a young people, to enter the drug trade, not because they want to, but because it's the only way to survive. So it's been a growingly desperate situation for millions of people, and they seized upon this candidacy of López Obrador to express their repudiation, their rejection of a system that has forgotten them and that has relegated them to near slave-like conditions in factories, that the few factories that do exist, the sweatshops or maquiladoras, or as in the case of farm workers in San Quintín, working 12 hours a day, 14 hours a day, often without pay, for less than $7 a day. So it's just been a dramatic, dramatic situation. And López Obrador, Andrés Manuel, the AMLO for his first name, Andrés Manuel, is someone who is seen in their eyes to be honest, to be a valiant fighter against corruption, and at least somebody who, in the past two campaigns, which he lost, or rather had the vote stolen in 2006 and 2012, promised to reverse these attacks, and the memory lingers of his campaign promises at the time. And he reiterated only very rarely during this campaign in 2018 of giving jobs back, of renegotiating or if not repealing NAFTA, of refusing to see the privatization. This is what he said in the past. I'm going to get to what he's saying in the present because it's a totally different script. But people interviewed after this election, and you should know that he won with 53% of the vote. It's a system where any plurality will win. It does not require an absolute majority to win. And there were three major parties, PRI, PAN, and Morena, which is his political organization, not really a party, that ran. And he was, he just wiped out the two parties of the regime, the PRI and the PAN, were decimated. It's a huge tsunami blow, 32 million votes for AMLO. And these other parties not only were devastated in the presidential election, but they lost the governorships in most of the states that they controlled. They lost their majority in both houses of Congress in Mexico, and they lost their majorities in the houses of Congress, Senates, and chambers of deputy in the 27 states across Mexico. So it was an absolute sweep, devastating. There's no excuse, as many of the people have said, for Andrés Manuel, for AMLO, not to go ahead and pursue an agenda in the interests of working people. He cannot hide behind, we don't have a majority in the Congress. They have full power in their hands to do whatever they want. But that's where the butt comes in. In the past, Andrés Manuel called for renationalizing everything that had been privatized in Mexico. He had taken a stand for repealing. At first, it was for repealing, and then he wanted to renegotiate NAFTA in the interests of the workers in, on both sides of the border. I was part of the team, in fact, of Mexicans living abroad. I have dual nationality. I was born in Mexico. Mexico is where I was raised. I've been going back there for 20, 30, 40 years. It's dear to everything that I've been doing in the labor movement for all this time. So I've been in touch with this, and I was part of the team in 2006. Many of us were that helped to discuss the immigration and trade policies. And when in 2012 and more recently he turned his back on that, he's now saying that he's going to maintain all the trade agreements. He's going to not ruffle any feathers. He's not going to touch or privatize or nationalize anything. He's not going to expropriate anything. He's not going to even revise the directives of the NAFTA agreements or the IMF and World Bank directives. All of these pledges were made in his economic program, which was revealed in February by his new Secretary of Finances, Manuel Ursúa, and by his the head of his transition team, Alfonso Romo, who wrote his most of his program for this 2018 campaign, and who was senior advisor to the PAN president in 2000, Fox, and who was senior advisor to Peña Nieto. So his key cabinet positions have gone to people who have been despised and who are the architects of the destruction of Mexico. Even the New York Times asked, well, how can AMLO fight corruption when he's included some of the most corrupt characters in his cabinet? Not only Romo and Ursúa, but across the board, he allowed, and not only allowed, but was the organizer to introduce into his cabinet and onto his slates some of the most despised characters of the PRI and the PAN. I was in Tabasco, the state of Tabasco, in March. This is the state where he was born, where AMLO was born, where he was a state deputy before he moved to Mexico City to become mayor. And the local people from Morena who spoke to me said they were just beside themselves. They had an internal election for who would be the candidate for mayor in the city of the capital city of, dang. Anyways, the name escapes me right now. And the Morena base had elected a very militant trade unionist, only to have that person removed undemocratically by AMLO and placed the past mayor of the town and of the city, and have this despised PRI, ex-PRI mayor named candidate on the slate of Morena. So there's huge turmoil in Morena, and a lot of the ranks are very angry at this process of turning Morena over to some of the most despised characters. Now, having said that, it's important to differentiate what AMLO, what his program, what the parameters that he has set for what he wants to do, and how he is perceived by the 32 million people who voted for him, because they have expectations that he's going to fulfill at least some of his promises. He's promised to maintain pensions for retirees and increase them by 150%. He's talked about scholarships for 2 million students. He's talked about getting money to reactivate the countryside and provide jobs. He's talked about renegotiating the contracts with the oil companies, and any that are corrupt or illicit will be revised, and the national Pemex will take over. So he's made some promises, which he says will be financed by fighting corruption. But as the Times said, how can you fight corruption with the people who are corrupt? And what will that provide the money necessary to enable him to carry out his social programs. His main goal is end corruption and fight on behalf of the poorest of the poor. That's not going to be possible if he doesn't raise taxes on the rich, and he said he won't do that. That's not possible if he doesn't reclaim national resources, especially Pemex. Pemex, the national oil company that's been privatized by Enrique Peña Nieto over the past 4 years, beginning with his directive in 2014, generated up to 40% of Mexico's GDP. That has been cut and slashed to less than 10% today. And that's because it's now been turned over to the Exxons, the Shells, a U.S. and European multinational corporations. Devastating, devastating the public schools and public hospitals and public institutions. Schools are on the chopping block, public schools. The unions have been on strike. Even some of the pro-government unions, teacher unions, went on strike in May, indefinite strike. They're still out on strike. The healthcare system, which has worked pretty much over 50, 60 years, is being destroyed and dismantled. That is the Institute for Mexican Social Security, IMSS, or the Social Security Healthcare System for Public Sector Workers, ISSSTE. So there's anticipation, there are great illusions, there's hope that things will change. At the same time, the AMLO, especially over the past three months, he's just multiplied day after day his pledge to respect the agreements with big business. Some people say that was just tactical. I've heard many people tell me, Alan, don't get bent out of shape. This is just tactical. He was denied the presidency because he was seen and the media were able to present him as too radical. And during the early stages of this campaign, the corporate media went after him. This is going to be chaotic for Mexico. It's going to be Chavez. It's going to dismantle the country. And instead of rising to the challenge and saying this is all a bunch of just a campaign smear, AMLO backtracked on just about everything. And so there's turmoil within his own campaign. One of his main campaign organizers, Ignacio Taibo, went public and said, any corporation that has, or any corporate entity that has tried to blackmail Andres Manuel will be expropriated. And Andres Manuel's campaign organizers, Manuel Ebrard, had to say that's not true. That was an illicit statement from the left wing of Morena. They don't speak for the party. We speak for the party. So there's turmoil within this movement at the backtracking. And most important, there's absolute mobilization at the base to ensure that the program will be met. The folks I work with in the unions and in the community organizations, the indigenous groups, they have issued a statement, a declaration, which is very powerful and which says the mandate of the people of July 1st, that's when the election took place, will be respected. We will form unitary committees, united committees, to ensure that that which we have fought for, our land, reclaiming our resources, renationalizing Pemex and the electrical and the entire electrical grid, and because that's when 40,000 electrical workers lost their jobs at Lucy Fuerza, big blow to the one of the most militant unions in Mexico, the Mexican Electrical Workers Union, SME. We want to repeal all the counter reforms that Peña Nieto, the past president, well, current president till December when López Obrador, AMLO, takes office. All the counter reforms decreed as part of the NAFTA agreement that decimated healthcare, education, the labor rights, privatizing all the public sector, and most important, the energy reform. And they use AMLO's statements from 6 years ago when he said Pemex no se vende, la patria se defiende. Pemex is not for sale. Our sovereignty, our nation will be defended. And so they're using, and the masses throughout his speech at the Zocalo, the night of July 1st, they were all chanting López Obrador's demands of 6 years ago, saying this is why we voted for you, to reclaim our sovereignty, to take back our rights, to make Mexico safe again. And that can only be done if we raise our income, if we raise our, if we give hope for the to the youth that there will be jobs. So it's a very dynamic, very unstable, very contradictory situation, Jack.
You mentioned United Committees being formed. You know, it seems to me that if they're going to hold López Obrador to what he used to stand for, and no one knows which AMLO we're seeing here, you know, the new one or the old one. So there's got to be some real organization just for some of the more progressives to state we will not allow this to happen. You must deliver. That's good, but there's got to be organization. And you mentioned these United Committees. How far along is that?
Well, it's very uneven. In many areas, such as the southeast, where I've spent a lot of time, Chiapas, Tabasco, Villahermosa is the capital. I don't know why I had a little forgetfulness there. Villahermosa is the capital of Tabasco. In the southeast, it's very, very advanced. The teachers, the dissident teachers union there, CENTE, C-N-T-E, has been the backbone, along with the Organizing Committee for a New Trade Union Federation, the NCT, and the OPT, the Organization of the Workers and the People. So there are a lot of fledgling independent organizations that are the backbone of this movement, a united movement with the López Obrador, people who voted for him and people who didn't. You have to remember that many people in Mexico were hoping that an indigenous woman, Marichuy, from the Zapatista movement, would be their candidate. And she did not get the, she was not able to raise, well, I think she did, but they were denied, 1 million signatures for her to qualify for the ballot. So a lot of people in that region were from Marichuy. But these United Committees are saying, however you voted, whoever you may have voted or not voted for, we're going to demand that the mandate of July 1st, which they give the content of the original López Obrador platform of 2006, that be respected. And they're creating these committees in neighborhoods, within the unions, within the community organizations, and they're saying there is no honeymoon. This is where the issue of 2008 in the United States came in, because a lot of people were saying, well, okay, Obama has made his peace, but we're gonna hold him accountable. We're gonna hold his feet to the fire, and of course they did nothing of the sort. When Obama promised the Employee Free Choice Act, what did the unions do? They said, well, they said he's gonna do it. He's gonna do it. And when he had the majority in both houses of Congress, he didn't do it. And the unions capitulated. They said, well, we don't want to push him too much because we're going to alienate him, and we're going to play right into the hands of the Republicans. We don't want to do that. And, of course, nothing was done during that year, key year and a half, to insist through organization, mobilization, independent action, that things be done. The folks in Mexico are saying, we don't care what pledges he may have made. We're going to impose the mandate of July 1st, and they've given it the content, which is progressive, and which is why people voted for López Obrador. It was not just for cosmetic changes. It was for profound systemic change. You have to remember that even in this, at the beginning of this campaign, López Obrador called for the creation of the fourth transformation. The first was independence. The second was the reform movement of the 1850s and 60s under Benito Juarez. The third was the Mexican Revolution. The fourth was this transformation under Morena. And so there's huge expectation that things are going to very, very change. Now, everybody knows it's not going to happen from one day to the next, but they want to see that the issue of renationalizing oil and repealing the counter reforms, that has to happen. That has to happen. It has to happen soon. And so there's already, and it has to be organized, as you said. It can't just be sporadic. So folks I'm working with within the unions, within the mass organizations, are saying that's our most immediate task. And these discussions are happening every day. There was an open letter before the election to Andrés Manuel López Obrador, which was signed by hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of trade unionists and activists, which said, this is what needs to be done. This is why we're voting for you on July 1st. And these are the changes that we expect and that we will organize to impose.
Is there any source that the listeners here can go to see what this alternative progressive program within Morena is? Is there some source that you can refer them to on some website or something?
Just careful. A lot of this movement is not happening at this point within Morena.
Okay.
It's happening within the unions and mass organizations. Morena activists are part of it, and the hope is that the Morena base will flock to these committees. But at this point, there's still a hesitation. You know, there's still, well, you know, we have our own internal structures. We want to make them work. Okay, if you think that can happen, go for it. But be part of our committees as well so that we can join forces to make sure that it happens and we don't just rely on whatever. And you have to keep in mind that Morena is not a very democratic formation. It's kind of a new formation that came out of the crisis of the PRD. Because don't forget, Andrés Manuel was the candidate.
What was the PRD?
The PRD was the Party of Democratic Revolution, which was formed in late 1980s by Cuauhtémoc Cárdenas as a break with the PRI. And it was the party of the opposition. Andrés Manuel was one of its leaders. He was a PRD mayor of Mexico City. But what happens from 1988 to 2014, 2012, is what's happened with also many organizations. The PRD became one of the most corrupt organizations in Mexico, and it moved so far to the right that it was part of the political alliance with the right, ultra-right-wing PAN. The PAN's coalition included the PRD, and so Andrés Manuel in 2012 to 14 said, we don't want any part of this, and he formed his new current Morena, which is a movement for national renovation. That's what Morena stands for. But it's not yet structured as a party. It doesn't have a lot of the internal mechanisms to recall and to rebuke. It's kind of a one-man show, really, to be quite honest. And one of my very close friends, who was just elected senator, Jesusa Rodriguez, has been very critical of the one-man show. So it's not clear how far... the resistance can develop within Morena. It's going to have to develop, of course, within it, but it's really going to be outside, within the mass movements and the unions, that this resistance is going to be organized. Where can people go? At this point, I'm just translating feverishly the dossiers and the materials. We have our own website, www.socialistorganizer.org, where we're reprinting all of these materials. Socialistorganizer.com. Our .org was hacked. Socialistorganizer.com. And you'll find all these dossiers and all the materials on Mexico that are provided from our comrades down there and from the broader movement within which our folks are working.
What we saw with Obama, of course, in 2008 was this fiction of progressive policies and positions and so forth during the election, And then as soon as he got elected, he started appointing to his cabinet and advisors all these bankers and all these former Clintonites and the old guard, really. Bankers, you know, from Goldman Sachs and I think it was Citigroup and so forth, and people who had worked in the Treasury and worked for these banks and so forth. So it was a big indicator soon after the election that there was not going to be any real progressive change. What do you see at this point? You mentioned pre-Pan advisors during the election on his wing here. What do you see, if anything, yet about appointees to positions, and what would you see as the key positions?
I think what you've said about Obama is absolutely right on. The key position, which has already been filled, is the Ministry of Finance, Hacienda, the Secretario de Hacienda. And the person nominated who wrote the economic plan in February is Manuel Urzúa, U-R-Z-U-A, who's a banker. I'm in the process of translating the economic plan. Would you believe, with all the articles on the financial pages, Market Watch, Financial Times, nowhere has AMLO's economic plan been translated into English, so I'm taking it upon myself to do that. It's devastatingly reactionary. It's not social democratic, or it has a slight gloss or veneer of social democratic. It's a very traditional, and as Urzúa says, in some ways we're more conservative and more financially orthodox than the two parties that preceded us. In other words, we're going to drastically cut public spending. Now, how can you provide jobs? So Urzúa, one of his answers is we're going to ask Trump to provide funding so that we can raise wages, which will close the gap that Trump is talking about. He's been talking about raising wages in Mexico, and we can prevent the drain and the mass migration to the United States. So rather than relying and using and building up national industry, re-nationalizing that all that was privatized, as had been his slogan in the past, he's going to go ask Trump to work out a deal, which is why his rhetoric in the debate, and it was startling, the last presidential debate in Mexico, which I was able to see from Tijuana, and the press all noted this, the most moderate candidate in relation to Trump was Andrés Manuel López Obrador. To try to make up some ground lost, Peña Nieto, who had invited Trump, remember this, to come to Mexico. This was the day that he announced that DACA was being suspended. Peña Nieto was raked over the coals for inviting Trump. So trying to make up, he became much more militant and started denouncing the separation of families. Andrés Manuel was nearly silent. And he was, the immigrant rights organizations were saying, Andrés Manuel, what do you have to speak out. You have to say you're not going to continue the policy of implementing U.S. immigration policy by preventing immigrants from Central America to transit through Mexico. Why has the U.S. border suddenly extended to Guatemala? And Mexico has been doing the dirty work of expelling back to Central America refugees fleeing violence and fleeing U.S.-promoted corporate free trade agreements, as in the case of CAFTA. And Andrés Manuel was silent. So, you know, some of the cabinet posts will have a more progressive face, but the key ones at this point that we have known, the transition team head, Romo, the Secretary of the Treasury, Ursua, are clearly in the hands of conservative bankers. And some of the people that he's nominated to lesser positions come from the PRI and from the PAN. He wants to be a coalition government. He wants to govern in the interests of all Mexicans. And, of course, that's just not possible.
Can you confirm here? I just wanted to make sure this guy Manuel Ursua, he's the lead candidate for the finance ministry, but he was also the fellow in February who developed AMLO's current program that you're trying to translate. Is that correct?
That's correct. Ursua is not a leading candidate. Andrés Manuel has already named positions for his team for his new cabinet. He hasn't named them all, but as the Wall Street Journal said, to appease the markets, he's made it. He named three positions that are all being held by conservative, orthodox, Yale-educated economists who are meant to do just that, to appease the markets and the financial interests, that this is not going to be a Venezuela. This is not, in his speech, he said, you know, we're not going to touch the markets. We're going to respect the independence of the central bank. We're not going to mess with fiscal policy. He said all the things to reassure investors that things aren't going to change. That's why Trump was the first to congratulate, the first foreign, even before Venezuela. And, you know, he got statements, of course, from Venezuela and from Cuba congratulating him. But Trump was out there saying, I look forward to meeting with you. And then they talked on the phone for an hour. So it's clear that imperialism wants to co-opt. But that's why there's very little time and the mass movement understands this to weigh in and to say, wait a second, we didn't go along with that. That's not what we voted for. These agreements and these things that you've made. So there's going to be a rude awakening. It's happening already. And people are, there are a lot of illusions, but there's a lot of sense that it's what we do as a people, as an organized working class, as an organized people, that's going to make the difference. And he will listen. There's still hope that if we organize, that he, for many people, it's not necessarily self-organization for the seizure of political power. It's self-organization so that he listens and will heed and bend to the will of the people. But that has a logic that, of course, goes beyond. As we build and as this movement builds its own institutions and organizations, it has a logic which goes way beyond just an electoral pressure on AMLO. So it's a very dynamic situation, Jack.
Yeah, for the listeners, Mexico leaders have a long history of being educated at Harvard and Yale. And all the people in top positions in Mexican government all make the trip to Harvard, Yale, Princeton, and their kids go there, and they're really enculturated here to be very friendly to the U.S. and U.S. business. So, you know, it's not strange that you said three of these positions announced key. Usually they announce the economic positions first are all U.S. educated Mexican technocrats. And I think it's going to be important to see who gets appointed to these key positions because they're the folks who are really going to implement the programs and to help define the programs that AMLO may actually settle on. And Mexico has this strange 5-month interim period, long period here before December, in which all the maneuverings can be done and all the back room deals can be made to get the right people there, right people for U.S. business and Mexican business that are like hand in glove integrated. Um, I think that's going to be the key to see what's going on in terms of how far AMLO will go in placating and implementing programs that really won't change much for Mexican folks. Any comment on that?
Well, as I said, these key posts, some of them have already been. He moved quickly to announce them, so it's
which
you don't
ones?
Have to wait.
Which
to
ones? Do you know, Alan? Which ones he's announced?
Yeah, he's announced the Secretary of Treasury, Hacienda, which is always the key, which is Manuel Ursúa, and he's announced the Secretaría de Gobernación, which is the Secretary of State, which is Alfonso Romo. These are two. He's announced two of the key, all okay. Considered in Mexico to be the two key positions, and they have reassured. You know, the Financial Times said these are good appointments. It bodes well, but again, Jack, it's not just what López Obrador wants to do. He is on very, very shaky ice because the Mexican people have been mobilized over the past many years. When he lost the election, when it was stolen in 2006, there were more than 3 million people in the streets regularly demanding a recount and opposing the fraud. And they occupied Mexico City for 4.5 months, the main avenue from Reforma down to El Prado, down to the Zócalo. It was a standing occupation. It paralyzed the city. There have been mobilizations galore despite the violence. And by the way, there was still a lot of violence in this election. 120 of the candidates that ran for local, state, national positions were killed during this election. 70% of them Morena candidates. And despite the violence, which was aimed at keeping people home, keeping them from voting, it was the largest electoral turnout. And the press has noted that one thing is what AMLO wants. Another thing is what the people want. And who will prevail is an open question. An aspect which I didn't touch on, which is very important, this is a plurality system. And at one point, 3 months before the election, deals were being discussed between the two main business parties, the PAN and the PRI, to have one of them step down in favor of the other so that there would just be one candidate of the United Right Wing to confront AMLO. And they said, we have to do this because we can't trust that AMLO will be able to contain this wave of repudiation of everything that we stand for. They said it in their own words. And they had a month worth of discussions. The president, Peña Nieto, was the moderator, trying to get Anaya from the PAN or Meade from the PRI to stand down in favor of the other. And the crisis of these two parties was such that they couldn't reach an agreement. Had they reached an agreement, they probably would not have won, but they might have come close enough to be able to risk another electoral fraud. They couldn't risk it with 20% difference in the polls and with rallies. Andrés Manuel's rallies were 20, 30 times the size of all other rallies, so they couldn't risk it. But with a united candidate, they may have. But the crisis of the institutions in Mexico, the political crisis, is such as that they couldn't even get together to have one of them step down. So all observers note that the Andrés Manuel has a very if he moves too fast to the right, he could lose his base and get them so pissed off that they immediately are out in the streets demanding before he's even taken office. That's already happening, by the way, in Mexico City. But he doesn't have much. He doesn't have, you know, the social democracy arose in Europe at a time when you could provide a little bit of butter with the guns. You could, there was a little bit of fat on the system that you could buy off some of the leaders. You could, there was some money for social programs, not many. There is no fat in the system in Mexico. He can't deliver on anything unless he takes inroads into the corporate multinational affairs. The Times noted that, saying there is no money out there in the fight against corruption. You're not going to get a lot of money back. And to think otherwise is just sheer madness. And so how he's going to generate money for all of that, even what he's promised, which is limited, and which people are expecting. They're expecting the money for the poor. They're expecting the pensions. They're expecting things, and they're expecting them soon. So there's a showdown being prepared.
Well, you know, you raise a point that immediately, from what little knowledge I have from afar, based on the U.S. Media, which is not very reliable, including the internet, was what raised my flag here was when I heard he's going to do all these things, pensions and so forth, by saving money, by ending corruption and lowering the salaries of government officials. And anyone with even rudimentary economic knowledge knows that that's BS. There's no way you could raise enough money without raising taxes on the wealthy to fund these social programs. But it seems to me like he's emphasizing a lot of corruption and doing something about the violence, which is related to the corruption, and then the economy. Of those three, corruption, violence, and economy, what do you think struck the bigger appeal to those who voted for him?
Well, if you read the corporate media, they have an interest in telling you it was all about corruption, because that's one where you can take a moral stand and you can maybe go after some of the worst apples. Now, if he really wanted to take on corruption, the first thing he'd have to do is put Anaya, the candidate of the PAN, in jail and seize his assets, because and this is one of the things that came out in their month of negotiations, the PRI initiated a lawsuit against Anaya for corruption, because Anaya owns an industrial park in Querétaro, a city with a lot of the maquila industries, and he's been accused of embezzling $640 million in funds in cahoots with the Banco de Santander in Spain. So is he going to go after Anaya? Is he really going to seize these assets and confiscate all illicit funds? Now, if he were to do that, you know, you could make a case that there's money out there. But he's made a pledge to all these folks that he's going to need them to build this national unity against corruption. So it's all very nebulous. The reality is that the underlying anger is that the loss of jobs, the loss of livelihood, which fuels the violence and the corruption. And if those underlying economic questions aren't resolved, all this other stuff is fluff. And people know that, but the corporate media has no interest in saying that the focus of their anger. So they'll find people who they'll interview on Univision and Telemundo, but if you go on the internet and see a lot of the reactions from the people, they're saying now we want our jobs back, we want our health care back, we want our resources back. And one of the big struggles in Mexico for the past year has been the struggle against the privatization of water and just the wells. Big corporations, beer industry has taken over the public water systems in four cities, including Mexicali, and the people are left without water. So this is not what you're hearing in the corporate media or even in a lot of the left media. And the left media largely is either bent to say, rah, rah, Obrador, nothing he does is wrong, and we got to give him breathing space to implement his program. He's facing a difficult situation. Let's not place too many demands on him, or else we're going to destabilize his whole thing. On the one hand, or people who are just look at his economic policies and his appointments and don't realize that the issue is helping not to just sit down and denounce Obrador, but to work with his base to fight illusions within the very terrain of those illusions, to help people shed those illusions by helping to organize them, to say it's up to you to make the changes that we need.
Has he given any signal about what his real attitude is towards NAFTA?
Well, he in 2006, repeal. In 2012, renegotiate in the interest of working people. 6 months ago during his campaign, renegotiate. 3 months ago when his big shift took place in his campaign with Romo saying, listen, we can win this thing, but you've got to tone down, you've got to make pledges, you've got to make agreements, you've got to bring in people in your campaign, you've got to bring them in on your slate so that we don't just make empty pledges, but we show that we mean it when we want to rule from the center. He's now said that he is not going to make any changes or propose any changes to the NAFTA renegotiation process. And he's meeting with Peña Nieto's trade advisor, Vidagaray, on Friday to see if there's any room for tightening or making some changes. It's all very vague. So people are expecting that he will make changes, but for now, he's just saying he's not going to rock the boat.
Is it your understanding in Mexican politics that in this interim period where he's president-elect, that Peña Nieto, the still sitting president, might rush to an agreement with Trump on NAFTA? I mean, I've been saying Trump, as far as NAFTA and Europe trade and Korea and all that, that this is a lot of smoke and mirrors. This is Trump appealing to his domestic political base and trying to close some deal before the U.S. midterm elections, and that the agreements are going to look, notwithstanding all the huff and puff going on, threats to tariffs and counter-tariffs, that there's going to be a settlement here between Trump administration and the allies that's going to be kind of token, more like the Korea free trade deal, which was a real softball deal concluded with South Korea as far as tariffs were concerned, and that it's a kind of a phony trade war here, could get out of control, but kind of phony between Trump and the allies, Trump and China. Now that's a different kind of a negotiation going on, but my view is that it's kind of eventually we will see a real softball deal, which Trump will then blow up and exaggerate and lie about to his base. Could that possibly mean a rush to a deal here by Nieto as he leaves, or in Mexico will he leave this up to AMLO?
That is a question that a lot of people are asking right now. I would have thought that they would have come. I thought actually that they were going to come to a deal. I agree with you. I don't. I'm not one who says, "Oh, you know, this is not possible." The problem is that the Trump administration is, from the point of view of negotiating a deal and trying to reach an agreement, has kind of blown it. The issue of family separations was so controversial and so universally repudiated in Mexico that Vidagaray had to say, the trade representative from Mexico had to say, you know, this is This is criminal. We can't really negotiate anything with this president unless he reverses this. He reversed it partially, but the 2,400 children are still in detention. Vida Garay says yesterday, as long as they're still in detention, how can we sit down at the table with these folks? He's under tremendous pressure to stay away. As of this morning, Market Watch says that they don't think there will be a rushed agreement, that Trump's going to wait to sit down with AMLO, who he thinks he has a better chance of negotiating a deal with. Both are populists, he says, and he's got a good feeling, this is Trump, about López Obrador. So I don't know. Anything could happen. But Trump, with all this rhetoric, and, you know, there's been the issue of tariffs of aluminum and steel has hurt Mexico. So this kind of hardball is making it difficult for any Mexican president, interim or not, to reach a deal. Of course, that would only add to the argument that it's better for a lame duck president to do it, because he can just leave and then leave AMLO to deal with the mess. I don't know. I really don't know. It could go either way.
Well, I think that's one thing to watch, as well as the appointments here. Now, just to confirm, this guy Romo and Urzúa, they came from the other parties. Is that correct?
Romo did. Urzúa is a technocrat. I don't know if he's been associated really with any party. Probably the PRI. I'd have to look into it. But Romo definitely... He's worked with both parties, PAN and PRI.
Okay. What should we look for here as any kind of signs or signals, as you described it very very thoroughly? It's a real situation in flux, and since he has no real hard, clear program, you know, we don't know which way he, AMLO, is going to really go. What would you say folks should look for in this interim period before December 1st?
Well, you'll have to look for statements from some of the left-wing activists within Morena trying to reposition and to try internally to return to the pledges of the earlier campaign, whether it's 2006, 2012, or early 2018, as opposed to the recent iteration. You're going to want to look at what the reaction of some of the more militant unions has been. The SME waited, the Electrical Workers Union, Mexican Electrical Workers Union, waited till very end to endorse López Obrador, but they did so saying we're going to expect the changes that he has promised throughout his campaign and around which, and which is the reason for which millions will be voting for him. So there, everybody's going to try to interpret and shape the mandate. You know, the business people are saying the mandate of July 1st is that he's going to pledge to keep the country solvent and within the framework of the international financial markets and institutions. That's their version of the mandate. So there's going to be a lot of jockeying.
Mm-hmm. How about the state legislatures and the governorships? Might we see some of them going out front with all the new people elected, trying to stake out a more progressive stance even before AMLO defines his?
Well, it's very possible. It's very possible one of the senator-elects Jesus Rodriguez gave an interview yesterday, which is bound to piss AMLO off big time, said, you know, I was elected because I want change and I don't want these old men to be making all the decisions. And that holds for my good friend AMLO. If he doesn't listen to the voices from below, we'll just have to knock him around like we've knocked all these other people around. There's nobody who, no one's immune. If we want change and we want fundamental change, and she was his campaign organizer in 2006 and 2012. So she is a very big voice. And for now, she's limiting the issue to decision making. But that's a big issue because Morena is not a party.
Well, I think we're going to have to end it on that, Alan. Thanks so very much for your excellent overview and analysis of what's going on. And folks want to read the translations of some of the positions and proposals. Again, I think the site is socialistorganizer.com. Take a look at that, and you know, let's watch this closely. And I'm sure we'll be bringing you back here as things get a little bit more interesting. Once again, this is Alternative Visions. This is Jack Rasmus. Thank you, Alan Benjamin. And next week, the global economy will be on the agenda. Walk the streets, screaming now.